I call Senate Resources Committee to order. Today is Wednesday, February 27th. The time is 3:32 p.m. Committee members present today, Vice Chair Senator Dyson, Senator McGuire, Senator Fairclough, Senator Bishop, Senator French. Senator Machicki is on his way, and I am Senator Giesel. So, welcome. Let's see. We have SJR 3 on the agenda. It's the second item, and actually that's where Senator Machicki is. He has he's bringing a document for that way, so we may be hearing SJR 3 later or on Friday. We'll see. Anyway, right now, the committee substitute for Senate Bill 21, version N, is before you. I have placed on your desks a legislative letter of intent. Let the record reflect that Senator Machicki has joined us. A legislative letter of intent to be transmitted with the bill. Also a Senate Resources Memorandum to the Finance Committee that supplements the record we have created here in Senate Resources and will be delivered to the Finance Committee. As you can see, it proposes five specific subjects within the Finance Committee's jurisdiction that were raised in our committee and merit further consideration. So there are 5 points there. But first, the Legislative Legal Services and the Department of Law have suggested a few refinements subsequent to the introduction of the CS, the committee substitute that we have before us, committee substitute for Senate Bill 21. So on your desks, actually delivered to you before the meeting, were three amendments, and they should be numbered amendments 5, 6, and 7. I know they say 1, 2, and 3 on them. So the one that says 1 should be number 5.
Okay.
The one that says number 2, cross that out and make it number 6. And the one that says amendment number 3, cross it out and say number 7.
Madam Chair, I'm sorry. I'm confused. Okay. I had a 7 and others, and you're saying...
Sharon?
Backslash N.7 is which one now?
You have a 1 in your hand.
Right.
See number 1 written
yep.
on it? That should be number 5.
Okay.
Amendment number 5. And then the one that says number 2 on it, and subsequent.
Six
yeah. and
okay.
7.
Great.
Yes.
Thank you.
I'm sorry. I apologize for the confusion. We neglected to remember that there had already been amendments introduced in the numbering of them. So, does everyone have those amendments in hand? Okay. Mr. Vice Chair, do I have a motion for amendment number 5?
Madam Chair, I move amendment number 5.
Is there objection?
I'll object, Madam Chair.
All right. Thank you, Senator French. My staff, Margaret Dowling, will introduce amendment number 5, speak to it. Departments of Law, Revenue, and our Legislative Legal Services have people here also to answer questions if need be. So, Margaret, welcome, if you would introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Margaret Dowling. I'm staff to Senator Giesel, chair of the committee. And basically what this amendment does is, as the senator said, it cleans up some minor word changes, nothing substantive, and I'll walk through those with you so you can see how this works. So the first, you'll see on the first page of the amendment, page 2, line 21, that concerns section 2. And basically, following on line 21, I'll give you a moment to get there, page 2, line 21, following section inserts the following language. A taxpayer receiving the transfer of a certificate under this subsection may not apply more than $10 million in tax credits authorized by this section in a single year and may not use a tax credit authorized by this section to reduce the tax limitation under this chapter below zero. And this change clarifies that the Alaska Manufacturing Credit, which has been included in the CS, if it's transferred, the transferee takes the credit subject to the same limitation that would be imposed on the person who earned the credit, basically to say that only $10 million in any one year can be applied against the tax liability. So it's really simply a wordsmithing change to clarify the intent of the section, and that's how that one works. And if you want an example to flesh out how it works, I can provide one, or I'll just continue to move on.
Just continue for now. We'll see if there's questions.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Next, on page 3, line 12, this is occurring also in section 2. Delete the first occurrence of the word and on the line and insert or. This is a simple change that clarifies that the costs associated with those manufacturing of goods that qualify for a tax credit under this provision can be used for goods either in the exploration, development, or production of oil and gas. With and in that sentence, it generally means in addition. So we're just clarifying that those goods can be used in either or of those different activities. Turning the page on line 3, pardon me, page 3, line 13, also in section 2, after the word gas on line 13, delete the following language, comma, regardless of whether the oil and gas is located in the state. This removes language that simply is not needed, because without that language, the concept is assumed that it doesn't matter where those products are used in the end, at the end point. And so the language is basically unnecessary, so removed. Page 3, line 16, this is also in section 2, delete the first occurrence of and insert or. That's the same change that I described up on line 12. Page 3, line 16 and 17, also in section 2, after the word gas, delete the remaining phrase, regardless of whether the oil and gas is located in the state. That's basically the same change that I described to you on on line 13. Moving to page 3, line 21, section 2, after the word development, delete the word and insert or. This is the same change that I described above on line 12 and line 16. Page 3, line 22, also in section 2. Again, after the word gas, delete, comma, regardless of whether the oil and gas is located in the state. And this is the same change that I described above on line 13 and line 17. Moving to page 8, line 22, this occurs in section 6. You'll see the number 20, delete that and replace it with 30. This is a conforming change which was needed in section 6 for AS 4355-020, payment of tax, to account for the change that we made on the GRE, increasing it from 20% to 30%. So it's just a conforming change. Turning to page 15, line 12, this occurs in section 15. Delete the word in and insert for. What this does is it clarifies that the tax credit that's increased 15% a year, and you remember that, the provision, it stops increasing on December 31st of the calendar year, immediately preceding the calendar year for which the credit is applied against the tax liability. This is just clarifying. It was a change brought to our attention by the Department of Law, and it's just a clarifying change. Page 15, line 23, it's also section 15, delete 4355024C, subsection C, basically, and just replace it with 4355024. And what this does, the reference to subsection C is really not necessary. All the credits under 024 must be considered, not just C, first when they determine the total tax liability, when they're calculating to see if it reaches zero or less before that loss carry forward credit can be applied. So just again, just a clarification change, removing subsection C, which was not necessary. Page 17, line 2, this is again in section 15, delete the word again and insert against. And this is just a simple word correction. Turning to page 18, line 15, this occurs in section 18 of the bill. Delete taxable oil and insert oil taxable under AS 4355011E. This is a change just to enhance clarity. Department of Law, again, brought this to our attention. They want to make sure there's no confusion. They want to ensure that the $5 a barrel credit is only applied against taxable oil, not royalty oil. So just want to make that clear. Page 22, line 24. This occurs in section 24. Delete the first occurrence of the word an, A-N, and insert any, A-N-Y.
That was page 20.
22.
22,
thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Page 22, line
24. Thank you.
Sure. And what this does is help to clarify that there may or there may not be an increase in the amount of credit under 023R, which is the provision that allows that 15% increase in value of a loss carry, unused loss carry forward credit. But it just says if there's any increase, it's not assuming that there is an increase. So it's just saying if there is an increase, then that must be identified in the statement that a producer would have to file with the department before they got that 15% increase. Now, page 27, line 4. This occurs in section 28 of the bill. Delete the words in area and insert the word acreage. This is a clarification change. Again, this is something that was brought to our attention by Department of Law, who recommended the substitution because the term area is presently defined in the Department of Revenue regulations as meaning a geographic region or geologic province, including the Cook Inlet or the North Slope of the state. So the change doesn't This change doesn't affect the intent of Section 24, but it certainly will remove any ambiguity as to whether area for this provision means the same thing as area as defined in regulations. So again, just a change to enhance clarity and avoid confusion. Page 27, line 7, also in Section 28, this is the exact same change where you see the words an area, insert acreages instead. Same page, page 27, line 8. Delete the word production tax value and insert the words gross value at the point of production. Again, this is a clarification change that the GRE has taken off the gross production tax value to achieve the production tax value, which cannot be reduced below zero. So it was a correction to just to enhance clarity again. Page 30, line 8. This occurs in section 33. Delete sections, and this is what you're deleting, the sentence, sections 9, 10, 11, 12, and 24, and insert sections 9, 10, 11, 12, 15, 20, 21, and 24. And basically, this is a conforming change that accounts for these amendments that we're making. And then also on page 30, line 29, there's a similar removing of numbers, section numbers, and inputting new section numbers. Again, just conforming to account for the changes that we're making with these amendments. And that, Madam Chair, is the full description of amendment number 5.
Thank you, Ms. Dowling. Any questions for Ms. Dowling on amendment number 1? Yes. Senator Fairclough.
Could we have a brief at ease?
Yes, brief at ease. On the record. Again, the question, any questions on amendment number 1? Seeing none.
Number 5. Yeah.
Pardon me. Thank you. Thank you, Senator French.
And I'll remove my objection to you.
All right.
Number 5.
Are there any other objections? Amendment number 5 is adopted. Mr. Chair, or excuse me, Mr. Vice Chair, do you have an amendment? Do I hear a motion for amendment number 6?
Madam Chair, I move amendment 6.
I'll object.
Is there objection? Oh. Senator French objects. Very good. Ms. Dowling, if you would take us through amendment number 6.
Certainly, Madam Chair. Amendment number 6 deals with Section 9, which you'll find on page 11. What we've done here, the Department of Law felt that this section could be worded better. And so we reworked the language so that Section 9 better clarified that the carried forward loss tax credit remains 25% for all areas, except now what we've done is, which is the original intent of Section 9, is to treat the North Slope slightly differently. For North Slope producers, what we've done with the carried forward loss is that it's still subject to the subsections of P through U, and it's in the amount of 35%, but only for expenses that are incurred after December 31, 2013. This is going to match the 35% base tax rate for the North Slope after December 31, 2013. And that, Madam Chair, is the substance of this amendment. It's just simply a reworking of the language that existed there, so it's clearer and better for taxpayers to understand.
Questions on, yes, amendment number 6, Senator French.
Madam Chair, so this is meant to ensure that it's a 25% net operating loss carry forward credit for south of the Brooks Range and a 35% for a north of the Brooks Range, for the North Slope.
Senator French, through the chair, that the 25% applies for all areas except for on the North Slope has its own treatment under this provision, which is the same as it would have been under the current Section 9. It's just rewording it with slightly more accuracy to reflect that after December 31st, 2013, that loss carry-forward credit for North Slope producers can be 35%. And I do have with us Mike Pawlowski from the Department of Revenue, and also the Attorney General, Susan Pollard, is here. If you would like a more in-depth discussion, they're here to answer those questions.
Would you like that, Senator Finch?
I wanted the answer just to be yes. It's 25% to the south of the state and 35% to the north of the state. Is it not that simple? If it's not that simple, I guess
I think it is that simple, okay. But let's, Madam Chair, if we could call on Mike Pawlowski,
yes,
to come.
Mr. Pawlowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Mike Pawlowski with the Department of Revenue. Senator French, it is that simple. I think the confusion is a little bit around the dates, and that has to do with the effective date of the Act. Mm-hmm. Expenditures during 2013 will be a 25% credit because the base rate during 2013 is 25%. The effective date of the Act, January 1st, 2014, the tax rate on the North Slope goes to 35%. After December 31st, 2013, the North Slope loss carry forward credit will go to 35%. It's just the specificity of when the expenditures are occurring, I think, is causing the confusion. Ms. Dowling is absolutely correct. It is a simple answer.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Further questions?
I'll remove my objection to amendment number 6.
Thank you, Senator French. Is there further objection to amendment number 6? Hearing none, amendment number 6 is adopted. Mr. Vice Chair, do I have a motion for amendment number 7?
Madam Chair, I move amendment number 7.
And I'll object to it.
Thank you. Senator French has objected. Ms. Dowling, amendment number 6.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Amendment number 7. Basically, in our vernacular, this is what you would call the anti-stacking provision. But let me be clear about what that means. The new Section 9 is designed to put producers on notice at the front end. You'll see the first language in the new Section 9 deals with 023A. And it inserts the language except as provided in AS 4355. 025Q. So 025Q is going to be a new section, and what this first Section 9 does is put the taxpayer on notice that they should go and take a look at subsection Q. The restriction provided in Q specifies that a North Slope producer cannot use the same expenditures for both a loss carryforward credit and for an exploration credit. The expenses can be used for one or the other, not both. This is consistent with our Alaska policy that disfavors allowing multiple credits or deductions using the same expense. And as you heard our experts testify, if we didn't put in such a provision, you would risk having credits taken under 023 in the amount of, say, 30%, and then the loss carry forward in the amount of 35% of those expenses for a total of 65%. And that's really not the policy the state wants to adopt. So we made this correction to clarify the intent of the provision. And again, with this, on there are other, on further pages of the amendment, you'll see they're conforming changes to account for the desired effective date of these new provisions and also an instruction to renumber the remaining sections of the bill. And Madam Chair, that's my summary of this amendment. We do, again, we have Department of Revenue, Department of Law, and our own attorneys from Legislative Legal are here to help answer any questions that you may have about this amendment.
Any questions on Amendment Number 7?
Yeah, Madam Chair.
Senator French.
Thank you. I guess I need to be walked through how they could have been, how those credits could have been stacked, what the maximum sort of credit would have been in the absence of this amendment, and what the maximum sort of credit is in the presence of the amendment. Do you understand?
Thank you for the question. I'd like to defer that question to Susan Pollard of Department of Law, and also I believe Mike Pulowski could help answer that question.
Great. We'll welcome them to the table.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record again, Michael Pulowski with the Department of Revenue. Senator French, as I understand it, we have auditors also online in Anchorage to offer additional testimony should it be necessary, that what you have are separate credits. The 023B credit is the loss carry forward, and the 025 credit is the exploration credit. And what happens is a company makes an expenditure, and that expenditure then qualifies for the credit based on that expenditure. So you could make an expenditure for an exploration well and use that same expenditure to claim a credit under 023B, which is the loss carry forward at 35%, and take that same expenditure and apply it against 025, which was the exploration credit. And so functionally, you would end up with a 65% credit when you combine the two of them against that expenditure.
Senator French?
Madam Chair, and would the would the exploration credit also be accumulating at 15% as if it were an NOL?
Senator French, through the chair, no. And I think I should be clear that the intent of this amendment is to make sure you cannot double claim. Instead of saying stackable, it's really claiming an expenditure against two separate credits twice. The exploration incentive credit that was expanded in the committee substitute is one that remains monetizable. And that is where they can still turn it into the state for a repayment on the exploration expenditures only. And remember, there are limitations in the 025 credit related to having to come into the Department of Natural Resources, pre-qualify the expenditures as an exploration target, and then share the information from that exploration with the Department of Natural Resources. The difference between that exploration credit and the blanket 023B credit is there's no similar qualification other than the expenditure was made. So this puts a taxpayer in the position of deciding really one or the other, is that they could take an expenditure and claim it only against the loss carry forward, and then that would not be able to be turned into the state for cash and would be carried forward with the increase until production occurs, but with the 10-year limit that is in the bill.
Senator French, follow up?
And the relative value of each?
Senator French, to the chair, the exploration incentive credit is 30% if within 25 miles of a unit boundary, and 40% if farther than 25 miles from a unit boundary. As Brooks Range testified with their map with the circles on it, most of the area within the Central North Slope is really within that 30% range. So it's 30% or 40% depending on distance from infrastructure. And then the loss carry forward credit in the committee substitute is 35% of the expenditure. Hmm. Or rather, I'm sorry, Mr. Senator French, the chair, 35% of the loss. I was assuming a right. taxpayer had no revenues in claiming that loss.
At 15%.
At 15% for 10 years, Senator French, through the chair.
And if I, just one more question. Thank you, Madam Chair. Do you have any idea from having spoken to the producers or the industry which they prefer?
Senator French, through the chair, I don't. I imagine it would depend upon each individual company. I believe the committee heard from Brooks Range in particular that the revision to the exploration incentive credit was material to their company per Ken Thompson's testimony.
Thank you. No further questions.
Further questions from committee members on amendment number 7.
Chair Kiesel, I'd like to just clarify.
Oh, yes, of course, Ms. Pollard.
If you could introduce yourself. From the Department of Law, and I think I didn't explain things quite clearly enough. The prior testimony explaining this amendment was completely correct, except that the reference to Section 9, where it references P through U, is referring to the Section 023 statute, which provides the new rules for the carry forward loss credit. The amendment that you're looking at right now adds a new section to Section 025, which is the exploration incentive credit that Mr. Pawlowski was just referring to.
Very good. Thank you. Anything further?
No, really.
Committee members, questions? All right. Senator French, do you maintain your objection?
No, I'll remove it.
All right. Any further objections? With that, amendment number 7 is adopted. Mr. Vice Chair, do I hear a motion on the bill?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I move that we move CS for Senate Bill 21 resources, that's the / N version with amendments and accompanying fiscal note, onto the next committee referral.
I'll object.
All right, there's been an objection. Would you like to speak to your objection, Senator French?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, this process feels rushed, at least to me. The amendments we just adopted make some significant changes. The CS we put in front of us last Friday basically revamps the governor's bill and adopts some significant new measures. I don't feel like that we've fully vetted that. The fiscal notes, which we all received this afternoon, have not been discussed by the committee. And so I believe the totality of the circumstances are that this is rushing through this committee to the next one, and I don't feel confident of the work. And so I appreciate the opportunity to ask questions and delve into the details, but I don't have a great confidence in our product. I know everyone's worked hard on it, but I just believe it needs more work from this committee. Thank you.
Further comments from committee members?
Yeah, I want to... Madam Chair, amend my previous motion to make sure that it includes individual recommendations and the letter of intent. So it would be, I move we pass committee substitute for Senate Bill 21 version /N as amended out of Senate Resources Committee with attached fiscal notes, individual recommendations and letter of intent.
Okay. Again, I'll ask once more. Any further comments? Senator French has objected. Any other comments from committee members?
Senator I appreciate the process we've used. We've spent many hours. Some of us have spent hundreds of hours processing this bill in two different committees. We've had the effects modeled. It's going to go to finance, which will have another opportunity to process the work that we've done here. And I believe that it's a product that's ready to pass on. I support it, and I'll be supporting passage to the next committee.
Thank you, Senator Machicki. Senator McGuire?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I had just one question for Department of Revenue, if I could.
Sure.
Just quickly on a fiscal note. Thank you. And I just, this is for the Finance Committee, because we just got the fiscal note in, but on the competitive review, I agree with the personal services and the travel in the fact that they would have two meetings at least, and so forth. The part that I'm not sure about, and I'd like my colleague to the right to carry the torch for me on into her committee, there is this services line, the $835,000 per year, almost $1 million, really. If you go to page 2 of that fiscal note, it says that that line reflects personal services costs that are estimated based on previous consulting contracts for oil and gas related issues that have been executed by the Department of Revenue. And I don't know that I agree with that. I'd like to just hear a little bit about that. I don't know that this board is meant to supplant what our Department of Revenue is doing. I think it's meant to do something slightly different. And I don't know that it's meant to do up to $1 million worth of personnel services. And so I just would say that I have a note of caution there, a red flag, and then hear some comments from Mr. Pawlowski, if I could.
That'd be great. Mr. Pawlowski?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, for the record, Mike Pawlowski, Department of Revenue. The department appreciates the dialogue on the issue as we go forward. There was, within the language of the Competitiveness Review Board, could be interpreted that they will engage in services with the types of groups like PFC, like Econ One, and like Gaffney Klein and Associates. And what the $835,000 is modeled after is the general baseline of those types of contracts. And so in that the Competitive Review Board would obtain regular consultants, that is the general level of what the contracts look like. So working with the Finance Committee, we'll talk through the expectation, the timing, and the pace. I think it's important to note that the way the fiscal note is written is that the personal services component of this is included already in the governor's FY14 budget, and what the department is recognizing is that the demands of the Competitiveness Review Board will be absorbed by the current staff and proposed staff of the Department of Revenue. So no new positions are being added to support this board, rather we'll absorb it with the existing work. It's just in that they would need professional level engagement like Econ One or PFC, there's a certain amount of cost that comes with that type and level of work.
Further questions, Senator McGuire?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Mr. Pawlowski.
All right. Any other questions for Mr. Pawlowski? All right. The question before the committee is the passage of this bill, version N. Senator French, do you remove your objection?
No, ma'am.
All right. Will the Secretary call the roll? Yes.
Senator Machiki?
Yes.
Senator Bishop?
Yes.
Senator Dyson?
Yes.
Senator Fairclough?
Yes.
Senator French?
No.
Senator Diesel?
Yes.
6 yeas and 1 nay.
All right, with a vote of 6 yeas and 1 nay, the CS for Senate Bill 21, version N, as amended, has been passed out of the committee with attached fiscal notes and individual recommendations and a letter of intent. We'll take a brief at ease to sign the transmittal paperwork. Committee's back on the record. We have before us now the committee substitute for sponsor substitute for Senate Joint Resolution Number 3. Is there a motion to bring this before the committee?
Yes, Madam Chair, I'd like to move to bring the CS for sponsor substitute number 3 to the committee.
All right, and this is version C?
That's correct. 28-LS-00-0331, version C.
I'll object for purposes of discussion.
Thank you, Senator Faircloth. So, Senator Machiki, would you like to present the bill? Or the resolution, that is?
Certainly. Senate Bill Resolution 3 closely mirrors and endorses the multiple previous resolutions. We updated it somewhat. It's to urge the United States Congress to pass legislation to open Alaska's coastal plain of the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge to oil and gas exploration and development. Such development is currently prohibited in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge under the Alaska National Interest Lands Conservation Act of 1980. It's clearly in our best interest to continue becoming less dependent on foreign sources for energy, and it's in the interest of Alaska to have that energy produced within the state. The one change to the resolution passed by the 27th legislature, and I'm going to talk about some other changes, the one significant change is that we will have a transportation system for oil very close to the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge with the installation of the Point Thompson Pipeline. It's a key time in our country's history and a key time in the need for energy security for Congress to finally see the light on opening ANWR to development. I'd like to pass out some other key items that have been changed. Line 11, page 2, the language is outdated. Although the domestic demand for energy continues to rise, we also are increasing domestic production. The old resolution didn't say that. Line 21 through 24 talks about the Point Thompson pipeline on page 2. We updated some of the numbers in line 1 through 4 on page 3 to make them a little bit more accurate. In line 11 on page 3, we added the Central Arctic caribou herd. On line 14 on page 3, we added has developed directional drilling technology. The old one was still at the sunrise of drilling technology. Line 18 in that section, that whereas we deleted reference to specific fields. The reality of it is we are practicing the innovative technology in the new fields, and that would enhance environmental protection beyond traditionally high standards. And finally, the whereas that begins on line 24, the older resolution was prior to Alaska's Energy Authority Renewable and Alternative Energy Resources Plan that was created by this legislature. I want to thank Senator Faircloth for some suggestions. We think it made it a stronger resolution. And just before I close, I just think the passage of this resolution by the 28th legislature continues the message echoed by previous legislators. Our current past governors and past and present members of Alaska's congressional delegation. It outlines obvious reasons for opening the 1002 area of ANWR. It also counters many arguments for keeping the land locked up to development. And committee, please keep in mind that ANWR is about the size of South Carolina, and the proposed development area in the coastal plain is about one-fifth the size of Washington, D.C.'s Dulles International Airport. So talking about a very specific area for development and one key to Alaska's energy future.
Thank you. Questions for the bill sponsor, for the resolution sponsor?
Brief at ease.
We're back on the record. Senator Faircuff?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to offer a conceptual amendment on page 3, line 3. After the word area, delete of not more than 2,000 acres, which is less than 0.1% of the area of the coastal plain. And this is conceptual, Madam Chair. And insert after the word area, as
limited.
As limited by Congress. That's not quite right. So let me speak to the conceptual motion, Madam Chair, while you guys are looking at that. Last night when I was reviewing this document and checking on the acreage, this 2,000, in past resolutions we've said 2,000 acres to 7,000 acres or 7,500 acres. Those were all contingent on pieces of legislation that Congress actually had before them, and they were considering, and they actually defined the scope of what would be available inside of the Arctic Coastal Plain for development. So at the smallest level, when the first bill was before Congress that the legislature was responding to, that number was very small at 2,000. As I understand it now, there is a $10,000 proposal in front of Congress, and so the issue is that we don't know that until Congress starts putting a bill to discuss ANWR in play. And amendment is to try to allow Congress to make that definition. They are absolutely trying to limit the area that is open for oil exploration. Originally, ANWR in the coastal plains had ANWR as itself had 8.9 million acres available, and another 9.16 million acres was added to that. And Congress has went back and forth now in actually understanding and defining the actual acreage as well as the acreage that would be available. So of all that, about 9 million is in wilderness, but there's another 9 million that's designated as refuge. So Alaskans as well as Americans can be secure in the fact that most of this land is out of oil development futures. So if I could try again on the amendment, Madam Chair.
Absolutely.
Senator Giesel. Thank you, Madam Chair. So the same deletion on page 3, line 3, after the word area, delete of not more than 2,000 acres, which is less than 0.1% of the area of the coastal plain. Insert after the word area, a limited area as defined by Congress.
All right. Is there objection to the conceptual amendment?
Just prior to...
Senator Machicki?
Could we hear from Adrian Herrera from Arctic Power, who's on the line, just about the amendment and see...
Are you objecting for purposes of discussion?
Yes, ma'am.
Very good. All right. On the line is Adrian Herrera from Arctic Power. Mr. Herrera, can you hear us?
Yes, I can. Thank you very much.
Welcome.
Thank you very much.
Did you hear the conceptual amendment? And we invite you to speak to it, please.
Yes, Madam Chairwoman. For the record, my name is Adrian Herrera. I am the D.C. Coordinator for Arctic Power in Washington, D.C. I agree with the proposed amendment. The explanation on how Congress came up with the 2,000-acre figure is correct, and that is an ever-changing figure. Currently, on the books of Capitol Hill, we have H.R. 49, which is Don Young's bill to open the 10-02 area, and it does have the 2,000-acre limit within that bill. Today, however, this morning at 11 o'clock, we had a second bill that was introduced that does have an ANWR 1002 provision in it, and I believe that bill this morning limits the acreage to 10,000 acres out of every 1,000 100,000 acres that can be leased within the 1002. It does not give a limitation as to the actual footprint size, however. So legislation is going to vary evermore, and I think keeping a footprint of 2,000 acres as a minimum is accurate as far as current legislation goes, but that changes evermore as Capitol Hill increases its legislation on the issue. I would like to add, however, that the issue of 2,000 acres or 10,000 out of every 100,000, for example, that the point is to minimize impact and minimize footprint, and I think that's what everybody on both sides of the aisle will agree upon within ANWR 1002 legislation.
Thank you, Mr. Herrera. Any questions for Mr. Herrera? Committee members.
I remove my objection.
All right. Is there any further objection to the conceptual amendment? Hearing none. Yes, Senator French.
I'll just say that it has the benefit of point of correcting the math error that's in that clause. I just ran the numbers, and we had a math error, but I'm glad we removed it.
I'm sorry. I couldn't quite hear what you said.
Oh, I'm sorry. There's a math error. The clause now says that 2,000 acres is less than 0.1% of the area of the coastal plain, but actually I think 0.1% of the area of the coastal plain is 1,500 acres, which is more than 2,000 acres is more than 1,500. So we fixed that by removing the clause. I think it's a good idea.
Okay, great. Thank you. Hearing no other objection, the conceptual amendment is adopted. Further discussion? All right, let's go to public testimony. Do we have anyone here in the room that wishes to testify on the committee substitute for the sponsor substitute for Senate Joint Resolution Number 3? There's no one signed up to testify. Is there anyone on the phone wishing to testify? All right. With no public testimony, we'll close public testimony at this time then. What is the will of the committee?
Madam Chair, I move the committee substitute for sponsored substitute SJR 3 as amended with attached zero fiscal note pass from committee Senate resources with individual recommendations.
And did you say? Oh, and you said thank you. Thank you, Senator Dyson. Is there objection? Hearing no objection, the motion is adopted, and the CS for sponsor substitute, Senate Joint Resolution Number 3, version C, as conceptually amended, is adopted. We will take a brief at ease to sign the transmittal documents. back on the record. So that completes our agenda for today. It also completes our work that had been previously scheduled for Friday and Saturday. So our next meeting will be next week, Monday, usual time, 3:30. So we'll be canceling both Friday and Saturday's meeting. With that, I will adjourn Senate Resources. The time is 4:26 p.m.